this past Wednesday, Pat Bowlin passed away. You may not even know Pat. He's the son of T.L. and Annette Bowlin here in Manchester. Annette used to work for the Manchester City School System. Pat was 48 years old. He played football for Gary Dyer and me at Westwood Junior High. And was just an extremely delightful person, a very deeply, deeply spiritual man who loved God, I think, to the utmost. He was buried yesterday in Normandy, Pat Bowlin, age 48, a good friend of mine. Back in the back here, every Sunday morning, we study the history of the church, led by a very competent and inauspicious teacher named David Dale. And it's really changed my whole outlook and thinking about, or the way I used to think about how we got to where we are today. And the more I sit in that class, the more I really, really appreciate what people, men have done in the past, and women. and people like Martin Luther and John Calvin and Zwingli and some other names I can't pronounce. People who were willing to stand up and say, you know, I think we've been misled. I think we've been told things that not necessarily biblical. Because, you know, Jesus had done that a long time earlier. You'll be turning your Bibles to Mark chapter 1. The opening two or three chapters of Mark chapter 1 picture Jesus many times in conflict with the religious leaders of his day, as he would teach his disciples. I think the picture you're looking at now, he's doing some teaching with his disciples, and Pharisees are kind of wondering, you know, what does he mean by all this? You know, what, he can't say that. That's the picture I get anyway from that. But the first two or three chapters of Mark's gospel picture Jesus as, I think, more than the other three writers, picture him as one with authority. And so I think in a series of several little scenes in the first two or three chapters of Mark, if you'll read those, Mark shows us that Jesus really is in control. I mean, he does some pretty big things. He faces down Satan. I mean, just face to face and causes him to stand down, as they say. He also, in the middle of Mark chapter 1, gets rid of some demons. And he calls disciples to follow him. And most of them, well, I guess basically all of them that he calls, follow him without questioning. At least at first, because there was something about what he said. He taught them in a way that was, well, at least to people who wanted to hear, that it was clear and fresh. Jesus also heals diseases, if you'll read the first two or three chapters here, and he sets his own schedule of when he wants to do what he wants to do. He even goes so far as to claim what was generally thought to be God's exclusive prerogative, that is, to forgive sins. That's pretty out there. And it didn't sit too well with the religious authorities. So I think this section of scriptures here in the first couple chapters of Mark, that contains several other things, or clear pictures of Jesus' authority. And some of them relate to his challenge of traditional Jewish rules and behavior among God's people. And the one I wanted to look at initially is in Mark chapter 1, beginning in verse 40. And you've been seeing some pictures come up that might represent that. Mark chapter 1 and verse 40. And a leper came to him and begged him on his knees. And he said, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Now, a very interesting statement next, the writer says. The writer says that Jesus was filled with compassion. Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. And he said to the man, "I'm willing." He just simply said, "Be clean." And the Bible says, immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. It's a simple story. But when you think about what Jesus really did, the risk he took here, it's more than just a simple story. I mean, he clearly stepped across the cultural and religious thinking of his day. The law of Moses was very clear. I just read this recently as I was reading through the book of Leviticus. Very clear as to how leprosy was to be diagnosed and treated. If you read the entire 13th chapter of Leviticus, talks about the detailed regulations if someone had this dreaded disease called leprosy. The most basic requirement was that the lepers were to be isolated from the rest of the Israelite community. The person, in fact, if you go to Leviticus chapter 13, you'll see this. In Leviticus chapter 13, verses 45 and 46, the person with such an infectious disease must wear torn clothes. I don't know if I know the significance of that or not. Let his hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of his face, and cry out, "Unclean, unclean." And as long as he has the infection, he remains unclean. He must live alone. He must live outside the camp. This isolation certainly was, you know, probably for fear of being contagious, but I think it was more ceremonial than anything. Like, you know, that talked about from touching a corpse or a woman during her menstrual period. The law required that these defiled people could not fellowship with the rest of society. Now don't forget what Jesus did here a minute ago. They could not share with the rest of their friends and neighbors in Jewish worship. So until their time had passed, time of uncleanness, and they had to do certain rituals also, they had to stay away from other people because they were defiled. And the leper in Mark's story just kind of didn't do that. He threw out the book of rules. I mean, he was in desperation. And so he came to Jesus, and you know what? There's no record of him shouting out that warning that he was supposed to shout out. You know, "Unclean, don't come near me." All we have a record of in the text is that he begged Jesus to heal him without regard to what the rules were. And Jesus' reaction was quite different from what it might have been from a lot of people. He was not disgusted with this man. Rather, the text said that he was filled with compassion. And that's a word, by the way, and I can't pronounce the word, but in the Greek, but it's a word that is used almost exclusively in the Bible to describe Jesus' very own emotions. It's a very strong word. Our English word, which we get from the Latin, is a word that indicates a sharp pain in the intestines. And as you well know, in those days, the intestines, not the heart like today, You know, we say down in our hearts. It was in the intestines with them. That was considered the center of emotions. And that's where we get that idea. You know, today we say, you know, I just feel in my gut that that's the right thing to do. And that's the idea. I did a little more reading on this, and one fellow said, this is what that meant. He said, here we begin to catch the new note in the ministry of Jesus. His intense compassion for this outcast, the sufferer who by his sin or by his suffering had put himself outside respectable Jewish community. And so you see, Jesus felt in his gut. He felt pain for this man. And so what did he do? He did the unthinkable, something most of us would not have done. Touched him. He touched him. I mean, he put his hand on him. A leper. I mean, he just went way beyond the rules of what a rabbi should be doing, or anybody for that matter. So what are we to get from this? Well, I think we clearly see that Jesus cared a lot more for people and for people who were hurting and suffering than he did for these cautious legalistic rules that the Pharisees had set up. Now, make no mistake about it, Jesus' actions did violate the ceremonial rule. I mean, his behavior ritually defiled him. I mean, here it is in Leviticus chapter 5 and verse 3. Leviticus 5 and verse 3 plainly says, or if he touches human uncleanness, anything that would make him unclean, even though he's unaware of it, he has become unclean and is guilty. But Jesus was more concerned about this suffering human being than he was about this ceremonial regulation, even though it was a regulation. Now, what receives our greater attention? Meticulous keeping of our traditional rules, or genuinely being concerned about doing the right thing for other people? There's a huge house up in New York City, or on the outskirts of New York City. I may have told this before, I don't remember. And it's filled with people who are dying with AIDS. Most of them, homosexuals. And this lady, who by the way, openly says she doesn't necessarily think that is a lifestyle that is compatible with biblical teaching, nevertheless, she oversees this project. And she welcomes people in who are dying of AIDS, who have been kicked out of their families, kicked out of their homes, living on the street and have nowhere to go and no one to turn to. You see, her rejection of this lifestyle does not kill her human compassion. She works regularly, daily, to care for AIDS patients in a variety of ways. She will not let cultural rules and norms keep her from touching the untouchable. Now, let's change that picture just a bit for a second. I suppose it's a good thing for us to oppose abortion as a means of birth control, but do we really only object, or do we try to practice what is right about that? I mean, how many abortion protesters are willing to adopt a child, say, from a minority racial group? Who will take a child into their home who is born HIV positive or drug dependent? Or the list could go on. You see, following Jesus means more than just keeping careful rules, as we sometimes emphasize, to maintain our purity. To follow Jesus involves doing good. Sometimes that requires people to go against the rules of society. Another implication of Jesus' action here, I think, is that he was not particularly concerned with what people thought about him. Do you see that? Undoubtedly, there were some who saw him touch this leper, who thought he had broken the code of law called the Torah. Now, there's no specific rule in that Torah that forbids such a contact, but just the consequence of becoming ceremonially unclean was in their minds a violation. That was enough to turn off a lot of people. But Jesus wasn't concerned about these distorted opinions. Whatever people thought of Jesus, he did what was right for people. And there are many, many other examples of this. So you see, if we dare to become Christ-like, we'll have to begin to reach over these barriers of class or gender or nationality or acceptability or whatever it might be. Regardless of what others may think about us or how they may condemn us, we must do what we think is right. You may remember a television show some years ago. It was back in the old Western days. And remember Dr. Quinn? Anybody remember that? Okay. Very delightful show. Dr. Quinn was a doctor, and Dr. Quinn was always involved in situations where what she did kind of went against what was socially acceptable in that time. Who she associated with, who she cared for, how she treated them. She had a lot of Christ-like characteristics, but many times was not popular with the masses of people. But she was determined to do what she thought was right. Another implication from Jesus touching this man, I think, it shows his own sense of right. He knew the right thing to do, and he did it. His authority, we talked about earlier, that's shown, I think, clearly in the first few chapters here, his authority would not let him back down. And in spite of getting some bad press, or the risk of getting some bad press, he went ahead. You see, being judged wrong was not very important to Jesus, that people thought he was wrong when compared to him doing what he thought was right. His touching the leper does not simply show disrespect for the law, but it rather reflects his consciousness of being who he was. He was the Son of God. And he knew who he was, and he knew what he had to do. And no rule and no ritual could stop him from being committed to behaving in a way that showed concern and compassion for people. Look at Mark chapter 2 now, the very next chapter. Mark chapter 2, beginning in verse 13. And Jesus went out again by the seashore, and all the multitude were coming to him, and he was teaching them. And as he passed by, he saw Levi. I think we got a picture of Levi here in just a minute. He saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting in a tax office. And he said to him, "Follow me." And he rose and followed him. And it came about that he was reclining at table in his house, that is in Levi's house, and many tax collectors and sinners were dining with Jesus and his disciples. For there were many of them, and they were following him. And when the scribes of the Pharisees saw that he was eating with the sinners and the tax gatherers, or the tax collectors, they began saying to his disciples, "Why is he eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners?" And that's when Jesus said, you remember, it's not those who are healthy who need a physician or a doctor, but it's those who are sick. I didn't come to call the righteous, but the sinners. There's our tax collector. Tax collectors were not well thought of, so they wouldn't allow pictures to be taken of them, so we don't have any pictures. So we had to come up with something, just a cartoon for that one. But anyone who reads the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, knows about the Pharisees and what they thought. I guess, you know, I thought about this last night. I guess they would kind of be considered maybe the segregationist, maybe, or at least to some degree, of their day. Or maybe the Puritans. Maybe the Puritans, who wanted to make sure that we taught complete 100% biblical truth and on everything. They insisted on the distinctiveness of Israel and Israel's religion. It was the only right one, you know. And they demanded boundaries between them and other people. Now, just before you think that I've lost my mind, I know it's true that the Old Covenant Scriptures did warn Israel not to mix with pagans and idolaters. That's true. I'm aware of that. There was a real risk that God's people could be led away to serve other gods. And that's, you know, before the Israelites crossed over the Jordan River into the land of Canaan, they were warned numerous times to make sure you rid this land of these idolaters, because there's a risk that you'll be led into idolatry by them. But the Pharisees had gone a step farther, I think, to keep themselves pure. They simply wrote off all the people who were in contact with pagans. And any who failed to keep all of their proper rules of purity. So you see, such careless Israelites, like Jesus was practicing here, were considered sinners by these true Puritans or segregationists. And the tax collectors were a despised group because they worked for the heathen Romans. To fellowship with such, what they thought to be, I guess I assume, riffraff might be a good term, was something that any conscientious Jew did, to not associate with them. So the best thing that the Pharisees would argue a good Jew could do would be to avoid any contact with these people, lepers and tax collectors and so forth. Such people were just simply below the level of being in fellowship with the religious people of that day. Needless to say, Jesus had a different view of life. He wanted to welcome every needy person. His only requirement was that people recognize that they needed him. Recognize they needed him. So you see, instead of rejecting a tax collector like Levi, later called Matthew, actually he became a close friend of Jesus. And then Jesus really got in hot water when he went to a party in Levi's home. The home of a tax collector. And that's when they said, look, he's eating with tax collectors and sinners. It would just have made Jewish religious leaders sick that this person who claims to be a rabbi, who actually has spoken about being the Son of God, that he had such poor taste in his company. And they began to write Jesus off as being not who he said he was. I mean, how could he be a real teacher, a real rabbi, if he associated with people like that? But you know, their hypocritical judgments never swayed Jesus for a second. Some of us need help, and some of us, and we know that we do, and so we won't help. Others of us, perhaps, don't know that we need help because we cannot see ourselves, and therefore we do not welcome that help. To the extent that we see our need for forgiveness, it's in proportion to how we react to Jesus. Jesus always focused his main attention on those who knew, that they were sinners, and that those who knew that they needed him. And that's why Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, there in the first part of Matthew chapter 5, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those that mourn. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Do you see a common thread through all those? People who recognize their need for something greater than themselves. These are the people that Jesus applauds, the ones that God accepts. Jesus will only react to people who see a need for him and are willing to turn to him because they have no other place to turn. Quite often these folks will not be the people who we may think they are. They may be unattractive people. They might be from a different social group. They might be distasteful, the kind of people we don't want to hang around. There's a large church about 15 years ago in downtown Atlanta, Georgia, right down there on Peachtree Street, that just packed up its bags, sold its building, and moved out into the Dunwoody area. I think you know what that means. They just left because didn't thought that would be better. I wonder which place you could find Jesus more often. The people there just were not their kind of people. So who in our day today are these lepers? Who are these tax collectors? Who are these sinners? Well, you determine that. Maybe unwed mother, an undocumented alien, gays, lesbians, handicapped, divorced people, a woman who's had an abortion, the alcoholic, the list goes on. You make your own list. The plain truth is, almost any time we feel repelled by a person's behavior, in most cases, you'll probably find that Jesus would be right there. Whenever someone sees his own spiritual sickness, Jesus will be a physician for that person. So you see, regardless of his reputation, Dr. Jesus still continues to keep making house calls. And maybe we who claim to follow him should do more of the same. The doctor is in. You need him, let somebody know. While together we stand and say.
Would he devote that sacred head for such a one as I? At the cross where I first saw the light, and the burden of my heart rolled away. It was there by faith I received my sight, and now I am happy all the day. Was it for crimes that I have done? He groaned up on the tree. Amazing pity, grace unknown, and love beyond degree. At the cross where I first saw the light, and the burden of my heart rolled away. It was there by faith I received my sight, and now I am happy all the day. Well might the sun in darkness hide and shut his glories in, when Christ the mighty maker died for man the creature's sin. At the cross where I first saw the light, and the burden of my heart rolled away. It was there by faith I received my sight, and now I am happy all the day. but drops of grief can ne'er repay the debt of love I owe. Here, Lord, I give myself away, 'tis all that I can do. At the cross, where I first saw the light, and the burden of my heart rolled away, rolled away. It was there by faith I received my sight, and now I am happy all the day. Please be seated.